benders and non-benders alike, welcome to Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's podcast about all things Avatar. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco.
Well, I am still on cloud nine from not only our conversation with both Mike and Brian, but also getting to talk to Eric Coleman. I feel like that was a first. Like, I don't know if he's been out there talking about his experience with the inception of Avatar The Last Airbender.
It's amazing. I don't think there's many, like, conversations with network executives like that. I haven't had many, not on any podcasts, for sure.
Yeah, and he really, like, just, there's some major stuff that he was such a big part of, including Zuko being a kiddo.
Mind-blowing.
Our dear, dear listeners, if you are here just for the recaps, we totally get it. However, I would say there are some juicy deets that are getting dropped in these conversations between recaps that you may just want to give a listen to, because it's pretty cool stuff. Some canon business that's getting out there.
And just want to thank all the fans for listening to the podcast and, you know, starting this adventure with us. And keep listening. Keep joining us every week for more amazing conversations with friends of the Avatar universe and me and Janet Varney making our way through the series.
I just want to shout out some listeners because I had sent out a question on Twitter and said, what are some of the places in book one that you would most like to visit? Like, what's your top place in book one that you'd want to visit? And we got a lot of answers for the Southern Air Temple. So I wanted to shout out Ale and Slade, Kaylee, Mateus, Chris, Tristan, Zachary, Thomas, Pierre Jerome, and Leah. I will find a way to get you to the glorious Southern Air Temple because that is your dream in book one. Thanks for answering. I will try to shout out more of these locations when we come across them in further recaps. Now, as we jump into this episode of the Southern Air Temple.
The Southern Air Temple.
It's a big episode.
Big episode for characters, and I've watched it now preparing for this podcast several times at different occasions, and I feel like I've been having deja vu and having a Groundhog Day moment over and over again. It's like, there's Momo. There's Momo. There's Momo.
That's right. So let's just do where we were when we left off. Of course, we know that the Avatar has escaped from the clutches of, right, Zuko?
Of the Fire Nation.
So we know that, as Grand said, the Avatar's future is sort of intrinsically now tied with Katara and Sokka. And indeed, they have already faced off Zuko to a certain degree. Aang has been captured. Aang has freed himself with help from those two and with Appa. And now they have agreed to go together to the North Pole so that Aang can learn how to waterbend. And hopefully Katara can also learn how to waterbend. That's equally as important, right?
Right. And meanwhile, on the other side of the neighborhood, in the Fire Nation, Zuko being bested for the first time, actually, by the Avatar, which, you know, I assume will not be the last time.
But he has to kind of go.
I mean, you know.
I mean, he kind of took you to task when you were at the small Southern Water Tribe. I'm just saying he did not make you look great, and he heroically agreed to go.
Varney, we got him. We don't know what history says in the books. What we do know is that he came escorted by the Fire Nation guard onto my ship.
You're right. You know. You're absolutely right.
But he got away. And now I'm with my uncle and I'm going to go join the fleet, Fire Nation side of this. There's two different side of stories going on. There's Aang and Katara and Sokka, and then there's Zuko and Uncle Iroh. And we meet a very important character, General Zhao.
That's right. And we also, on the Airbender side, we meet Monk Gyatso. So very quickly, just to do a kind of overview, as we just said, Aang suggests a visit to the Southern Air Temple. This is going to be along the way as they head towards the North Pole and towards the Northern Water Tribe. And he's so excited to go. That's his home, the Southern Air Temple. He wants to go back. He's telling his friends the stories of his mentor and all of this stuff. And then they get to the Air Temple. Of course, it's been 100 years. So much has happened. Aang's kind of been in denial about it.
Ghost town. It's a ghost town. Let's be honest.
Ghost town. Town. Almost, with one adorable exception that we'll get to. And so he is confronted with the loss of his entire community. And he gets angry, as he has in the past. And we see him go into the Avatar state. And that absolutely sets off even more alarm bells everywhere that the Avatar is back. Now kind of everyone knows because all these different temples have lit up. And as you said, Zuko and Iroh have to interact with Zhao, and they have a whole thing, including what we will come to find out is an Agni Kai. Very exciting, very cool scene.
Can we just say once Jason Isaacs' voice jumps on the screen, I mean, it's so... I mean, watching it again is just like, all of a sudden you hear his voice and you're like, oh my God, that's so epic.
He injects a lot into his characters, and that, and just using your voice to kind of give them any layers of like, ooh, this is not a good person. Like, you really get it right away. But
not
we're getting ahead
person.
Of ourselves. Really quickly, yes, I just want to acknowledge, of course, that this episode, The Southern Air Temple, was written by Michael DiMartino. It was directed by Lauren McMullen. And I think one of the big themes that we're going to be talking about that we really see in this episode is the idea of our relationship to the past and our relationship to the present and not staying in either of those places too much, right? Not getting locked into it and understanding that we're all on a journey and that, as we understand it, time is sort of moving forward. So a lot of stuff to confront in this episode for Aang and for Zuko. So let's get into it. Let's start talking about what happens. So we start the episode. There's a beautiful giant sunrise. We see that Aang and Katara are already awake. They're getting ready. They're getting onto Appa. Sokka's still asleep. He's in a sleeping bag. And, you know, over on the side, Katara's like, oh, I'm a little worried because Aang is clearly so excited to go back to the Southern Air Temple. And it's like...
And she knows. She knows.
Yes, and we know, right? I mean, we know. They've said that no one's seen an airbender. We know that he's in this sort of state of denial, and we've all had friends like this, right? And I've been this way, where your brain knows one thing, and your heart will not allow that communication to take place, and it sort of shoves that to the back and just focuses on what you hope will be true. And it's so hard to be the friend on the other side of that going,
totally.
Ugh, like he's going to, can I cushion the blow now? Or does he need to go on his own journey and figure that out for himself? What good is it going to do if I try to keep pulling him back to Earth?
And it's accentuated early in the whole show. And Aang is still a kid. Like he's 12. And so he has that childish kind of energy, boyish energy. And they're treating him in that way. Like a child, like, don't tell him because he's just going to be upset that, you know, all his friends are gone and the toys are broken. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Sokka's down though. Sokka's like, let's tell this dude right now.
Yeah, if and they Katara. Can wake him up. He can't even, so far they haven't even been able to get Sokka up. So Aang has to tell him, oh, there's a prickle snake. There's a prickle snake in your sleeping bag. So, you know, Sokka leaps up and then finally it's like, okay, that's got you out of bed. Let's get on Appa. We got to go. And so they start heading out. And then that takes us to the other side. Like, what is waking up from in the sunrise look like with Zuko and the Fire Nation?
Well, it's a lot of red auburn tones. Definitely.
Real red theme. Real crimson.
Real red. Real auburn.
Ruby.
Very Blade Runner. Very Blade Runner-ish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Zuko gets to meet a new character, as we talked about earlier, General Zhao, with that brilliant voice of Jason Isaacs. He's so great in the character. And believe me, it's not, you know, we also know he's Malfoy. You know, we know he's Malfoy in Harry Potter. It's like that same kind of dark character with evilness that is not fake evil. Like, really, this guy's up to no good.
There's just disdain that he clearly feels probably towards everyone, maybe with the exception of the Fire Lord. But you kind of even wonder if he has his eye on the real prize. You know what I mean? It's like he may defer to somebody who's quote unquote above him, but it's only to serve his own end, right? I mean, it seems like this is a guy who is clearly very sure of himself and very sure that he's the smartest person in the room. In any room.
And I remember actually recording this episode and the first time recording with Jason. And, you know, I walked in the room and I'm like, and I wasn't even thinking Harry Potter. I was thinking, hey, man, that's the guy from The Patriot. You know,
yes,
The Patriot.
Yes, yes.
And I mean, I love him. He's such a great actor. And I was like, oh, my God, this show is awesome. We're getting some amazing actors on this show. And then I don't know if I told the story earlier, but running into him at Sundance years later when the show popped off and we're just in the snow kind of like, both bewildered. He was like, Dante, that cartoon we did. I'm like, I know. He goes, what the? We didn't understand how, you know, we have movies in the festival and everyone's excited about this cartoon we did. And we were just kind of like dumbfounded in the snow at Sundance looking at each other like, how did we, you know,
that's
trip
so
into
awesome.
This one? So
that's
crazy.
So awesome.
So
and then
out
both
to
of
Jason
you were like,
Isaacs.
And you're like, by the way, this is uncomfortable for both members of Fire Nation because we are standing in the snow, probably wearing parkas.
Cold. Very, very cold. Trying to be cool in the cold.
That's right. Didn't you tell me that that Mike and Brian had mentioned even back when they got him to do it, right? And I think this is a known thing that they were like, well, it would be great to get like a Jason Isaac type. And they were like, well, Nickelodeon said, well, let's make some calls. Let's see if we can get...
That's so
the actual
crazy.
Person.
And I'm still always thinking about since we're still in the beginning of the show and the show's just, no one knows the show. And it's Mike and Brian's like first thing. It's like, I don't know how the gods of Hollywood had kissed them and blessed them to have such great talent. Obviously, because it's a great story. And it's just sometimes these things work out in Hollywood. It's great.
Ugh. So they got him. They got him and they just said, be the evil character that you always play just with an American accent or something like that.
Right,
and he
right,
was
right,
like,
right.
I know how
and he's
to
brilliant.
Do that. He's so
and
good.
And he's brilliant. So they have a whole thing, right? He's like asking what happened to your ship. I mean, Zuko tells a little white lie. Little white lie that he gets caught in. Nothing like getting caught in a lie, huh, Zuko? And Zuko's trying to get out of it, but of course, you know, good old Uncle Iroh just wants some tea.
Yeah, and if Zhao is being nice to you, you're probably in a lot of trouble. You know what I mean? It's
Zuko
like he's
knew
so
that.
Super
Zuko's
silly.
Like, we don't need to be
why
here.
Don't you just
we're good.
Come inside for some tea. Tell me more. Like this.
He's like, nah, we're good. We're good. And Uncle Iroh's like, how about that tea? You know,
got some ginseng tea. Yeah.
Not great things are gonna happen. Then we cut back to Aang and Sokka and company and Katara. You know, Sokka's always hungry, as usual.
Yeah.
Looking for his blubbered seal jerky. But somehow, Aang used that as Kindle to start a fire. It's actually very interesting that, you know, we start to realize that Aang is kind of like a vegetarian.
Yeah.
You get it throughout the show, but this is when you start to, is it officially later? But here you start to kind of hear like, oh, he's not eating jerky. He's not into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't even occur to him to do that. And meanwhile, you know, Katara is still stuck in the space of,
you shouldn't expect so much from your visit to the Air Temple.
The Fire Nation is capable of a lot of bad things. We have this moment that almost, I mean, from my perspective, and I could be wrong, maybe it resonated bigger and louder for other people, but I remember the first time watching this episode, it almost felt like it was tucked underneath, that it's like fully confirmed that, yes, the Fire Nation killed Katara's mom. But it is one of those things that, you know, she sort of puts it out there, but it's really interesting because it's almost like the story isn't about her in that moment. You know, she's not
right.
Making it about her. So it almost is an aside. Like, you know.
Before we get to the temple, I want to talk to you about the airbenders.
What about them?
Well, I just want you to be prepared for what you might see. The Fire Nation is ruthless. They killed my mother. They could have done the same to your people.
But that's a big moment. Right? To really think,
it
oh
is a
my
big
heavens,
for sure.
They killed her mother. Oh.
To be fair, we killed a lot of people.
I mean, if you want to dig yourself out of this one with that excuse, be my guest. Let me hand you a shovel. Let me just hand you this shovel.
We didn't go out there to go get your mom. It was not anywhere. It was in no plan book or strategy. Let's go get Katara's mom. Things happened. We don't even know which guy got her. One of the bumbling buffoons probably got her accidentally.
Sure, sure. I will give you that. I seriously doubt that Zuko was a part of that directly. But, you know, Aang's
Zuko
not even
wasn't
that,
a part of it.
He was not around for
no,
that.
No, I was a kid.
Yeah, exactly. You were an angry pre-Scar. You were probably still an angry kid. But
I was being ignored by my father.
Yeah,
early
that's not good. That's not good for anybody. Now, Aang's not even worried about it. And, you know, one of the things that he says is you can't even get to this place. There's no way they got to the Southern Air Temple. They can't get there because the only way you can get there is on a flying bison. So seems like nothing bad can come of it. Like, oh, I guess we were wrong about being worried, because surely the Southern Air Temple is intact. Nothing bad could happen. Foreshadow report, foreshadow report. In fact, why don't we take a quick break so we can enjoy this very, very brief moment where it seems like maybe the Southern Air Temple is going to be fine. Let's take that break. We'll relish in that feeling because it's about to go away when we come back.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Okay, so Aang, you know what? Aang's not even going to worry about it. And he actually, in all of his reminiscing about his time back at the Southern Air Temple when he was growing up, before he didn't get a chance to grow up and immediately was frozen into an iceberg.
Yes.
You know, Monkey Yatsu said,
"But we can't concern ourselves with what was. We must act on what is."
We go into this beautiful flashback where we really get to see the Southern Air Temple alive,
right,
with the monks. And
awesome.
Oh, how cool is that?
A very good juxtaposition from the barren ghost land that they arrive in. And they see that. I think that statue was made out of wood. Was that a wooden statue at the air temple of my man?
It looked wooden. It might be.
It was a carving.
It was a carving. Could
statue.
Be stone, could be wood. Someone right now is angry with us for not knowing the material that statue is made out of. Okay.
It looked like wood to me.
Then we're good.
And then the flashback is so beautiful with the golden era. It looked like the golden age. And
yeah.
even the way the animation was, it kind of had that misty, kind of like special filter on that camera that was just bringing us back to just a brighter, lighter time.
That's right.
And funny. I mean, this is the other stuff, is it goes back into like these comedy things. You know, they're teaching Aang like a really valuable lesson, and then it gets kind of popped off by the throwing of the cakes onto the other monks' heads.
Monkey Yatsu's gooey centered cakes.
It's great. I mean, that's Avatar stuff, you know, giving you the good medicine and giving you the morals of the stuff, and then also giving you the sweet stuff, literally, with the cakes on this part. And the anime manga, kind of like all these expressions on the guys, really funny.
Absolutely. And we really see too, you know, you can project ahead a couple of things about Monkey Yatsu. You see that he has the full understanding that Aang is both a child and the Avatar, right? And I think you really get a sense of, okay, he is the perfect mentor for Aang, because there are a lot of very stern monks who clearly are leaning harder into the sort of heaviness and the gravity of him being the Avatar. But Monkey Yatsu knows he has to have a lightness and levity. And I think those things mean the same thing, but didn't it sound cool that I said like two different words? And
that's a good vocabulary word. I liked it.
And so you really see, because you can imagine projecting into the future, you can imagine how Monkey Yatsu would sort of shape Aang's training so that as he becomes less of a child, perhaps things do get more serious. Perhaps things do get more somber as he is sort of taking him along this path. And he never got the chance to do that. And so we really see that, oh, the whimsy that Aang feels, even in the sign of stress, is potentially a direct result of that. But Monkey Yatsu never really got to take him any further, you know?
It's interesting, too, he said that you're feeling this way about being the Avatar because they told you too early.
Mm, great.
He said they're supposed to tell you at 16.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
And he got told at 12, which is, I don't know the whole reasoning behind it. I would think because there's some probably some prophecy what's going on. And so we have to tell him earlier in the game than later, which kind of spurred him to actually go and not want to be a part of it and get caught in the iceberg and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Did
Korra know at 16, by the way?
She knew when she was little. Remember little baby Korra jumps out? "I'm the Avatar and you had to deal with it."
That's right.
She's like all tiny, shooting, with her
then
little pot
belly.
What's
going on? What's up with this 16-year-old thing?
I mean, talk about foreshadow report. Talk about a full many, many decades of a foreshadow report.
That was a foreshadow report, foreshadow report. I was just wondering if they were holding true to the 16 with Korra.
Not at all.
But they decided it worked for Aang.
Let's just
tell all the kids now, as soon as they speak.
Right.
We're like,
that's
you're
right.
The Avatar. Guess what?
That's right. So, you know, here we are, total ghost town, but Aang continues to hold out hope. You know, they get to the sort of center of the temple with the giant doors, and he's like, regardless of everything else, you know, I see that everyone must have left, tears going down my cheek as I say that, as he thinks they left, air quotes, and air quotes for the air temple. He says, don't worry, you can't get inside this temple only an airbender can get in. And so we see him just do this amazing move, and he pushes the air through these channels. And that is computer generated. That's a very cool computer animation where you sort of see the way things interlock and affect each other. And then, yes, the doors swing open. And we all just have our fingers majorly painfully crossed that Aang is not going to have another disappointment. And before we can find out what it is, we get back over to your favorite person, Commander Zhao, who has in fact given you some ginseng tea, but unfortunately he's also captured you.
Yeah, well, he catches me in a lie. A little lie. He said I, you know, interviewed all your shipmates and found out what was really going on. He was like, ooh, that's not good. Then Zhao realizes, because he was saying too, like, no one's believing the Avatar is alive, but now they're having firsthand recognition that the Avatar is alive. While, you know, a lot of people in the episode are finding out the Avatar has returned. And then Zhao takes it upon himself to take over the mission. You know, I guess when they gave Zuko the mission, it was like, you know, some garbage mission you're going to give the king, yeah, and the Fire Lord's son as a teenager. Like, yeah, guess what? Yeah. Go find the Easter Bunny.
That's right.
When you get him, you come back and hang out with the family. Until then.
That's right.
Go find that Easter Bunny.
Yeah. You're so right. You're so, so right. And to be honest with you, I hadn't really thought about that. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because it must have been like that. It must have been like, yeah, you know what? You can come back by when you capture Santa Claus. I don't know. Like, yeah.
Get Santa Claus.
Let's give you the most impossible
thing.
Bring
Santa Claus. And it's all forgiven.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Zuko's like, I will. Fight him. I will.
Fine, Santa Claus. I'm getting Dasher, Dancer, all that whole posse, and I'm bringing them home with me. And then I'm going to be like, how you like me now?
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. It's actually really heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. But now Zhao's like, I'm taking him. Then all of a sudden, he just bullies him. Like, guess what, kid? Mm-mm. Not for teenagers. I'm taking over the mission. You're a loser anyway. And then that really riles up Zuko.
Yeah.
And he gets himself maybe a little bit over his head. All of a sudden, he gets into an Agni Kai situation.
That's right.
That escalated real fast.
That's right. And so before Zuko fully, you know, challenges Zhao, as we'll get to, we do quickly go back to the Air Temple. We're in this dark room filled with statues. And, you know, first it looks like a lot of statues, and then you sort of look up and realize this spiral of hallways are stretching all the way up. And that's where you really get a sense of how long this world, this Avatarverse, this world that we're in The Last Airbender, how ancient it truly is. Because if you look at the lifetime of each of one of those avatars, you sort of are put in check, like, oh, this is epic. This is epic.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
It's a big world.
It says
long,
a lot.
Long last. I thought the same thing, too. I thought the same thing. Like, how many avatars are there actually been? I mean, it looks like hundreds, if not 1,000. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a ton of past avatars. And Aang is kind of drawn to, he sort of recognizes Avatar Roku. He feels himself drawn to him. He knows it's the avatar before him. And we find out, again, more of the sort of mythology of the entire universe. When the Avatar dies, he's reincarnated into the next nation in the cycle, right? So that's why Aang is an airbender. That's why Roku was part of the Fire Nation. And so
when we first find that out, Katara's telling us it's air, water, earth, fire. That's the cycle of the Avatar. This is the first time we're hearing all that information.
Yeah. But like in the intro, she actually, I think, says water, earth, fire, air. It's like
which is the same
wefu
cycle.
Which is the same cycle. And it's only starting. Exactly right. And so it just keeps rotating around depending on what nation you're the Avatar, in which you're the Avatar. And if that isn't confusing
and
enough
what's,
for
you, know,
you
another
it
interesting
is
thing. Another interesting thing when I was watching it over again, as they're talking about it and she's telling Aang about the situation and the audience, and then Sokka reacts to it like it's fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, he scoffs.
Because, I mean, it's 100 years and, like, you know, like, there's again, it's like the idea of the Avatar could be like a religious thing where people go, you really, you still believe in that stuff? I mean, Sure. That's how Sokka's character is reacting to it, which is, I never thought about it in that way until I watched it again recently.
Yeah, that's a great point. And even in this moment, right, where we are with this incredibly intense, huge moment where you feel so small thinking about everyone that's come before and yes, how key the Avatar, what a key role the Avatar has clearly played in these generations and generations of people. There is this sound in the sort of doorway of the temple, and we see this shadow, and they think it's the Fire Nation, and then we get a closer look.
It looks like his helmet.
It looks like a Fire Nation
helmet.
That
they saw in the snow earlier, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Good call. And then we see that it's actually this kind of cute little like chirpy lemur, and of course, Sokka's first response is, I'm going to eat you.
He's going to eat that. He's going to barbecue that lemur. He's ready to eat that lemur.
He thinks it looks like a tasty snack.
And little do we know, that's going to be one of our heroes throughout the whole series.
That's right.
Momo's big time. He saves a lot of days through,
that's right.
Foreshadow Report. He's a lot of help towards the crew. He's actually the MVP of some episodes in the future.
That's true.
But is he a lemur? Is he a cross between anything, Janet?
Yes, Momo.
A lemur and something?
So he's a flying bat mixed with a lemur. And if you recall from our chat with Mike and Brian, Momo was inspired by Brian's cat at the time, Buddy, which I think is completely adorable. I have the Avatar art book right here, one of my prized possessions.
Yes.
And they do talk about the design of Momo. He was really a part of the original designs. Like he was absolutely a key character from the very beginning. He looked a little bit different in the way that they were designing him, but he was always going to be in the story. He's described as being a little robot, a cyclops monkey named Momo 3 with an arrow on his head and a futuristic staff. If you have this art book, you well know this already. If you don't, I recommend you get it, because
I have
a
that art book and I don't
trove.
Know that.
So it's interesting that he used to be the one that had the an arrow.
He was a robot?
And he was a robot. Hey, listen, things changed for the better.
Where did they get a robot?
I mean, it's a whole thing. You know what? It's a whole thing.
That idea is very reminiscent, if you remember, Clash of the Titans.
Aang is having a great time chasing him. He's loving chasing him. There's a great moment in the animation where he's chasing Momo through the air so quickly that his eyes are literally watering, which I think is just this great touch, because we've all been in a situation like that. Like if you're on a ride at Disneyland or whatever, or you've got their window open, you're going really fast, just get those tears in your eyes. I thought that was such a great touch. So it's small, but beautiful. And this actually brings up a new segment. We're going to call it Share Me the Details. Like, spare me the details, but instead we want to share the details. It's going to be a segment where we focus on all the little details that people, including me, might have sometimes missed in their first or second or third watch of the show. There's just so much to love in this show. And I actually can't take credit for the concept. This came from one of our many amazing listeners. Michael on Twitter pointed out a great moment and said, you know, can we have a segment that sort of spotlights beautiful little small details. I said, yes, let's do it. We're jumping in. I named it. It's a bad pun. Share me the details. This is going to be great. Thank you, Michael. And then that takes us back to our argument that is happening with Zuko trying to stand up to Zhao. And how does that go?
Well, he definitely stands up to Zhao and he gets himself into some really warm water really quick. And I think this is the first time we are introduced to Agni Kai's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Challenges
right.
To Agni Kai, which is a Fire Nation duel. Maybe to the death, but definitely to a lot of bodily harm and scarring.
That's right.
Which they allude to in a brilliant way. This is when you start to find out like little things about Zuko and where he gets into it. They have these extremes. They push into these like really awesome close-ups of Zhao and Zuko with like these camera moves. Very dramatic. And then Uncle Iroh, you know, he adds to it and has a little doubt about his nephew getting into this Agni Kai. He's like, remember what, you know, and they go, remember what happens to the last time you had Agni Kai? And he's like, I'll never forget it. And they zoom in on the scar. So you start to understand, like, oh, that's probably how he got that. That's not a birthmark. No, that ain't a birthmark. All right. And so we get to see these guys do some Fire Nation fighting, which I must say, you know, once Zuko takes his shirt off, kid's pretty ripped.
Can I tell you, when I was rewatching it, I was like, I'm really going to hear about how ripped Zuko is. Like, I already know that conversation
stacked.
Is going to happen.
I mean, he's 16, but he's
ready for it.
Eats very low carbs, a lot of protein. He's on a keto diet. He's ripped. He's depressed, right. So he's not into eating anyway. You know?
That's right.
He just wants to just practice all day. But we get to see some really great firebending. We do see some moves that are very breakdancer-esque.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if they are in full battle yet. So I can't remember where they are in the Agni Kai, which I think translates to literally fire plus meat. That's actually a true thing.
Is that
those
what it means?
Those are two words that mean fire and meat.
Does that mean cook the meat?
I mean, I think it means just like
burn
fire.
Meat.
I mean, no, meat what, like what no, like you meat.
Oh. Fire meeting. Meat. Fire meeting. I'm like, are you talking about barbecue, Barney? What you talking about?
As soon as I realized what you were saying, I realized how totally believable and practical it would be that it could be the M-E-A-T instead of M-E-E-T. But no, it is fire meeting.
Fire meeting.
You could think of it as like two fires meeting and potentially fighting. But meanwhile, Aang has been chasing Momo, and he chases him into this chamber. And in this chamber, he sees all of these, we don't know, are they bodies, are they... There
a lot of Fire Nation uniforms.
It's definitely Fire Nation uniforms. And then we see this skeleton. But let's not gloss over Monkey Atso, who is a skeleton. And there he is. And it's awful.
Morbid moment for a kid's show. Nickelodeon. You come home from school. You're enjoying this episode. A little action, a little comedy, a little heart feels. And then he's chasing the cute little lemur, flying bat, maybe cat, and skeleton of the guy we met earlier. Straight up. We see it's a skeleton because we see the necklace around his neck, and we're like, that dude's dead. That dude's dead.
And that's, I mean, talk about, there is no denying that. You know, it's like, for all the worry that Katara and Sokka had about how Aang was going to take everything or how they were going to tell him or how it was all going to go down, ultimately is confronted with the skeleton. I mean, I cannot even imagine that trauma. Of course, Mike and Brian handle it really well.
That's heavy for a kid's show.
But it's very heavy, and it's heavy for Aang. You know, when you see him realizing, and he even says Gyatso's name.
Gyatso.
And it's like he's feeling his sorrow as a child. He's feeling that rush of emotion, and it becomes clear that that emotion overpowers him, and the sadness turns to a sort of rage. And we see those eyes light up, and it's a bit of
Yeah, it's Avatar State again. Although there's nothing, the past times we've seen him do the Avatar State is because he's like in danger.
Great
or
point.
He has to save the day.
I'm so glad you said that. Great point.
Yeah, we're just seeing it triggered this time by an emotional state, which again, for a kid's show, I can't imagine pitching this episode to the network. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
We're going to introduce this great grandpa, sageful character, and then we're going to kill him by the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And we're going to show him on screen. You're like, what? And then he's going to go into this very emotional state, and no one kind of knows what to do. And that emotional state also triggers, I think, the other temples going off, right? Because then all the other Avatar statues kind of like their eyes start to glow in this hole. We get to see what the Avatar state does.
Exactly. And I don't think we've ever, you know, we haven't seen yet the way that this connection exists. Okay, you see the eyes light up in the Southern Air Temple. That's okay, right? Because it's a Southern Air Temple. It's the safe place, whether or not it's safe in terms of there still being people there. No, there aren't. But it's not like it's happening in the Fire Nation. Well, guess what? It happens in the Earth Nation. It happens in the Fire Nation. The Fire Nation.
Right.
People, the sort of, we don't know, are they priests? We're not sure yet, but they see, and there's an instant, like, go tell Lord or something. Like, they can't wait to tell the Fire Lord.
Right, they're all gonna definitely narc out the Avatars. But I think they're also happy, too, but they're also scared of their dictator, I guess. But I was wondering, too, what are they, there's just different temples around the different kingdoms?
Like, yeah, I mean, temples, we don't really know. That's a great question. And at this point, we don't know. I mean, we don't even know what is true for the Airbenders, other than that, you know, we now know as part of the kind of lore and the canon from Mike and Brian that Airbenders are nomads and that they actually have four locations in the world that are their kind of spiritual cultural center.
Right.
So there's a southern, eastern, western, northern, and but we certainly don't know that in what we're seeing in the episodes. And we don't know. It's the first time we're seeing a temple in another nation. Like, oh, they can't wait to share that hot goss. Cannot wait to share the hot goss with Fire Lord Ozai.
How are they connected? Do they have internet? What's going on? Fiber optics going on through this avatar state? I don't know.
I could almost guarantee you they don't have the internet. But let's talk about that amongst ourselves while we take a quick break.
This episode of Braving the Elements is brought to you by Monkeyazzo's gooey-centered cakes. Fluffy on the outside, gooey on the inside. A taste so delicious, you'll be walking on air. Monkeyazzo's gooey-centered cakes. Keeping the goo where it belongs until your teeth are ready.
And we're back. And we're back at the Agni Kai between Zhao and Zuko. Fight's going actually pretty good. I mean,
agreed.
Yeah, Zuko's younger. I mean, I even watching it, I'm like, Zuko's in over his head. But guess what? Zuko's holding his own pretty strong. He is getting coached by Uncle Iroh on the side, which reminds Zuko to break his root.
Basics, Zuko. Break his root.
That's right. And we don't know what that means yet, really, do we?
Reminded me a little bit of Karate Kid. Sweep the leg. Sweep the leg.
That's right.
He's like, sweep
the leg. You would bring up the Cobra Kais. Of course they would be Fire
the
Nation.
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kais.
And then just as Zhao gets on the jump on Zuko, Zuko breaks his root in a triplicate? Would you call that a triplicate? I don't know.
Oh, well, yeah. You see, it's that thing where you see, like in martial arts movies, where you see that kick where he breaks his root. You sort of see it, and then you see it from a different angle, and then you see it from a different angle again. So you're seeing the same moment kind of through these different, like, lenses of the camera. It's very cinematic so that you can really get the impact of, like, oh, he is breaking his root. Whoa. And by the way, I want to say...
And he's a badass.
Yeah, and for the record, Zhao has one of those triangle-shaped muscular bodies. It's too much.
Yeah.
Too big of a neck, too big of shoulders. Zuko's got it going on. That's all I'm saying.
Zuko's more svelte. We're on the same page.
I know. Listen, I'm giving
Zhao's
it to
a man.
You.
Zhao's a man.
I'm
very
giving
thin
it to
hips.
You.
Very thin hips on
and
that.
And the music. The music in the show is so extraordinary. You know, these fight sequences where you just have that, the drum beats, and it's such a perfect complement to what's going on in the scene as we see these extraordinary moves by both Zuko and by Zhao.
By both Zuko and Zhao.
But and Zuko takes control. He breaks his root, and he's like, it's my game now.
He breaks his root, and Zuko bests Zhao. And you think he's going to scar Zhao because of the anger in Zuko, but, I mean... He strikes
mercy
on the side just to let him know, I could have maimed you, but I didn't. Even though you talked a lot of trash to my face and really, I mean, Zhao cuts to the guttural. Zhao don't fool around. Like,
he's really awful.
I mean, I hate those people. You can't even fight fair. Like, yeah, just say something about me. I did something wrong. But no, you want to cut to the guttural and try to hurt me.
You're a
and
failure.
Hurt my soul.
This is who you are. Yeah, absolutely.
Everything. He
absolutely
went in on the guy, right?
Absolutely.
And then Zuko, like, he shoots the firebolt to the side, which is amazing, and just let him know, like, I could have hurt you, but I didn't. And then, on, you know, of course, on the way out, punk-ass Zhao goes to really basically shoot him in the back with fire with a move. And then, actually, Uncle Iroh comes in and stops his foot. And this is, like, the first time Uncle Iroh goes from this kind of bumbling uncle, like, foolery thing that he's kind of doing.
Yes, indeed.
Comedy relief. And it's the first time you got to see just a glimpse of the power that Uncle Iroh has. That's the glimpse of what may come in the future. A really, really beautiful moment. And then you also see that Zuko actually has some, you know, there's a good side to Zuko. He's not here to destroy everything. He's angry.
Yes.
But he's not here to destroy.
Yes.
I mean, Zhao, straight punk. But.
Yeah, and when Iroh steps in, he even says...
Even in exile, my nephew is more honorable than you. Thanks again for the tea. It was delicious.
And then you see, and oh, Dante, the way Zuko responds, that like, oh, a kind word. Like, he's so hungry for that moment, right? And you know how when someone says something really nice to you and you're like, it felt so good. Or maybe it was too good to even be believed. Like, maybe I could hear it again.
Right.
And so he sort of searches for it, like,
did you really mean that, Uncle?
And then Iroh's like,
of course. I told you Jing Sang Tea is my favorite.
And you're like, no! Why couldn't you give it to him one more time? He just needed to hear it one more time.
He does want to indulge his young nephew in compliments. Once is enough. Once is enough for now.
Yeah, that's right. And he does love ginseng tea.
And he loves himself some tea. Loves himself some tea.
And then we go back to Aang. He's in the Avatar state. Katara is trying to get him to come back. Come back to us. You know, just what do you do? It's never worked before. I mean, maybe it's worked a little bit. But to your point earlier, you know, this is an entirely different situation to when we've seen him in the Avatar state before. And what do you do? And so all she can do is try to kind of talk him back down. And he's literally levitating. So she really is actually trying to literally talk him back down. And she's saying, you know,
Aang, I know you're upset. And I know how hard it is to lose the people you love. I went through the same thing when I lost my mom. Monk Gyatso and the other airbenders may be gone, but you still have a family. Sokka and I, we're your family now.
Want to do a segment called All the Feels, which is just about those moments in the show where you get the feels, and I have to like pause it and be like, yes, they are his family now, Aang. Please hear her on this.
It is true.
So good.
It is true. A lot of morals about family and chosen family. You know,
that's right.
Which is really beautiful.
That's right. And I love to see how that chosen family evolves. Foreshadow report. I'm looking at you, Zuko. Foreshadow report. So he comes back and Sokka says, you know, we'll protect you. And Aang says, you know, well, I'm going to need help. I'm going to need it, you know, in a sense, because if the Fire Nation can find the temple, you know, they can access all the temples. Like, what can't they do? He really thought that the air temples would be safe from the Fire Nation, and they're not. And so that's very somber and classic break when you're sort of going, your stomach is sinking. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, this is bad. Then we see Momo, who is not even yet named Momo. We see our little lemur.
The lemur comes back in with fruits and veggies for the hungry Sokka, who's been hungry through the whole show, hasn't eaten anything.
That's right.
All day. And so he finally gets some food, which is, you know, animal-less food, some fruits and veggies, which takes us to almost the end of the episode. And as they fly away and the air temple is enclosed once again by fog, we name him Momo. And that are another part of the gang kind of joins the crew, and it's Momo. I guess he's the last flying lemur, the last bison, the last air. They're all the last airbenders because they all fly. They're all airbenders, right?
Oh, that's an interesting idea. That's really interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, Appa is. Yeah, we spent so much time talking about Aang being the last airbender, but you ain't seen any other flying bison. You
those
know,
are the last
airbenders. And you know, how do they end up together and you know, all of that. The relationship between Aang and Appa is so beautiful. And a couple of weeks ago you and I were talking about how chill Appa is, and then I had that moment where I realized that you're Appa and I'm Momo. In this episode it really hit home
this
again.
This is true.
I was
like that.
Ugh, I'm totally Momo. I'm just like what are you
does he say why he named him Momo? Because I know Momo means peach.
I don't think he says. I don't think he says. Certainly in the show, he doesn't say it.
Why. Right.
But he does bring. I mean, he's bringing those fruits and vegetables. And listen, he is a peach.
Yeah.
In the
it's true.
Adorable
and just some
creature
side sense questions. Farney, can I post some side questions?
Sure. I'm sure I won't know the answer.
We never found out how Fire Nation got up there.
No.
But we found the Fire Nation helmets. Fire Nation got there. They can't get there without an air bison. Sokka has not, foreshadowing alert, invented any like air flying Fire Nation stuff yet.
We haven't seen any of that. So you're 1,000% right. We have absolutely no clue how they got up there. We don't know. And that's what's scary. That's what's scary, because he's like, I don't know how this happened. And if this, then what else? You're right.
Oh, everything. Like, I can't answer. Everything else. Everything else.
Oh, so
so rough. But at least we picked ourselves up a Momo, and I'm bummed that I didn't get a chance to see what a prickle snake looks like, but listen, it was made up because they needed to get Sokka going. So unfortunately, we didn't have a ton of new animals in this one, but we did have Momo. Do you want to talk a little bit about most valuable bending and non-bending moments in the show? I did not prepare one. I wanted to talk it out.
I was thinking a lot about the most valuable bending moment. I mean, it has to be the door. It has to be opening of the door. Which is beautiful, by the way. Beautiful, beautiful.
It does, but...
But?
I'll give you that. I love the door. I almost thought you were going to say, and it's both a bending and a non-bending moment, and I'm willing to say it right now. I'm going to say it. For me, personally, from a character development point of view, the most powerful and most important bending moment, which is also a non-bending moment, is Zuko breaking Zhao's root. And then choosing to have mercy. Bending, non-bending, side by side.
Ooh,
huge moment for how
good.
We understand Zuko. I don't know why I'm taking... I mean, I am handing you... I've basically given you truffles, a bouquet of roses, a big teddy bear. I mean, I'm just loving on Zuko this episode.
I like that. And I did not go Zuko for either one of these. I was thinking the bending moment was Aang and opening the door because it's such an epic kind of thing that we see him unlock the door. And then I went... for a non-bending moment, which could be bending, I'm not sure. When Uncle Iroh stopped Zhao's foot, like in a non-bending.
Yeah.
Or maybe he canceled out the bending. I don't know what he did.
Yeah.
But it was pretty, it just felt very heavy.
You're right.
And strong in the moment. And was a shift for Uncle Iroh's character where you're like, hold up.
Yep.
Who's this dude?
Yeah.
Like, he's been in disguise this whole time. And he's actually someone else.
And he probably will go back into that disguise almost immediately.
Probably.
But that's what makes it so juicy. I agree. I think those are also great choices. We talked about some of the bigger themes in the episode. Also, you know, I think the idea of being an outsider, right? Because we have this kind of parallel happening with finding out, again, getting this experience of Zuko more and more. We're seeing just how much of an outsider he is. And we also have Aang as the, you know, he's everything that he was on the inside of, i.e. the Southern Air Temple, is gone. So there's a parallel there.
That's true.
They're both locked out of their own worlds in a way.
They're both nomads. Zuko is a nomad within his own Fire Nation, and it really hits home this episode of just how banished he is, what that means, you know, how other Fire Nation and generals and how they look at him. I mean, he's like, you know, they pity him. They look down upon him. He's royalty, and they talk to him like he's straight trash.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge episode. It's a great episode. We talked too a little bit about the idea of the past and the present and how they inform one another, and also, you know, this idea of when you have this recognition of loss in that happens in your past, or in the case of Aang, you know, it happened so long ago. That's also so hard too. It's that feeling of I'm only starting to mourn this now. And he's a skeleton. Like, he's been dead for so long. And yet it's totally fresh for Aang. And that's a real hard thing, I think, for us all to sort of come to terms with, is just our relationship to those things, to time and to loss. And he's a child. And thank goodness he has Katara and Sokka and Momo and Appa.
He's a child. But he is a 112-year-old child.
It's the yin and yang. It's all over. It's everything is kind of leveling out.
He's 100 years.
I know.
Everyone bonkers. He knows is dead.
It's bonkers.
Or is it? Foreshadow report.
Well, this has been such a pleasure and a joy, as always. I always walk away feeling like I get I understand the episode deeper and differently when I talk to you about it, my dear friend. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I always feel like we're in, I didn't go to college, but I feel like we're in some collegiate class, Avatar 101, where we get to discuss.
And you know, they teach classes on Avatar in some colleges. We're going to go audit those classes.
I know. I have a friend that did a whole course she created on Avatars for like self-help.
Absolutely love that. I absolutely love that. Friends, we will talk to you next week on Braving the Elements. Thank you so much for being with us.
And next week we have a special guest talking to the one and only Jack DeSena. And if you don't know who he is, he's the voice actor who played my boy Sokka.
which will be so much fun to talk to him.
Cannot wait.
We'll see everybody next Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you guys next week.